Trib Live Radio presents Panther Lair, hosted by Pit Insider Chris Peek of PantherLair.com. A full hour of Pit football, basketball, and recruiting talk. Trib Total Media, see what's next. Now, here's your host, Chris Peek.
Well, when you bring the number five team in the country into your home stadium and they have all the talent they have and all the matchup advantages that they appear to have, you're probably going to need to play your absolute best game to have a chance. And I think we can probably all agree that on Saturday afternoon at Heinz Field, Pitt didn't exactly play its best game against number five Notre Dame with all that talent. And while I wouldn't go so far as to say they never had a chance, you know, I wouldn't drop a Vin Diesel on them and say, you never had me, you never had your car, you never had a chance, you never had your game, you never had your stadium. I wouldn't go that far. I would say that game was decided pretty early on, and it was pretty clear that even though Pitt got within an onside kick late in the game of really making it interesting and managed to kind of hang with Notre Dame throughout the third quarter and into the fourth quarter, I think it was pretty clear what was happening in that game from the start. And that began with Notre Dame scoring in three plays and ended with a 42-30 victory for the Irish. You know what? Sometimes when you play really good teams, that happens. And sometimes you need to be able to play not just your best game, but above the level of what your best game is in order to really have a chance to compete. And Pitt didn't. Pitt didn't play their best game. They didn't play above the level of their best game. And in some instances, I would say they played maybe one of their worst games. And that's not a good recipe. And, you know, coming into this game, I think we talked on Thursday. And certainly I wrote about it throughout the week on PantherLair.com. And if you talked to me at any point during the week or heard some of the radio interviews I did, I talked with Mike Graw for the Pitt Notre Dame preview show we did here on Trib Live Radio. I was very apprehensive about Pitt's chances in that game. And I was very, I don't know if you would say pessimistic, but I didn't expect Pitt to have a good chance because there were so many matchups that favored Notre Dame. When you looked at what Marquise Williams did against Pitt, and then you have DeShon Kizer coming in. When you looked at what some of North Carolina's receivers did against Pitt, or even Syracuse's receivers did against Pitt, and then you looked at a guy like Will Fuller coming in, you said, boy, this is trouble. And then you looked at the other side of the ball, and you see all those athletes and team speed that Notre Dame has. That's a very good team. It's not a team without its flaws, but it's a very good team. And you say, you know what? They not only are they a very good team, but they match up really well against Pitt. Notre Dame's strengths, the running quarterback, the big, talented running backs, the outstanding wide receivers, that takes advantage of a lot of other teams. I mean, that's how you, if you could have that combination of players, you're going to beat a lot of other teams as Notre Dame has. And certainly against Pitt's roster this season, Pitt's defensive roster, you're going to end up with a lot of matchup advantages. And Brian Kelly took advantage of those matchups. DeShon Kizer took advantage of those matchups. Will Fuller took advantage of those matchups for one of the more dominating performances I've seen by a wide receiver in recent years against Pitt. And they exploited those matchups to the tune of a 42-30 victory. And I will say that there's something to be said. Obviously, if you're at Notre Dame, you should be able to recruit well. And that's one half of the equation. You have to be able to coach well. And if you don't, then it doesn't matter what kind of talent you bring in. But there's something to be said for a coach in his sixth or seventh year of being at a program. Because by then, particularly if you're at a place like Notre Dame, you should have the roster built kind of like Brian Kelly has done with this 2015 Notre Dame roster. If you listened to the Panther Lair show last week on Trib Live Radio with Brian Driscoll from BlueGoldIllustrated.com on to preview the game, I mean, it gave great insight. And I asked him to compare this team to the 2012 team. Of course, that team that went to the national championship game, the game that the team that Pitt almost beat in overtime in South Bend. And we all remember that. Two number twos and a pretty phantom pass interference call, et cetera, et cetera. Missed field goal that could have beat Notre Dame and ended the Irish's national championship hopes. And I asked Brian to compare those two teams. I said, is this Brian Kelly's best team? And, you know, how does this team compare to 2012? And, you know, Brian Driscoll's answer was pretty good. I thought he said the book is still being written on 2015 on trying to determine if this is Brian Kelly's best team. But as it compares to 2012, that 2012 team was a team that was built with a really, really good defense. I mean, you know the names like Stephon Tuitt and Manti Te'o and the whole group front to back. That was just a really talented defense when the offense just really kind of had to manage the ball and manage the game and not commit too many turnovers and protect the ball in that way. Whereas this year's team still has a really good defense, not as good as that 2012 defense, but it's got a much more dynamic offense. And you saw it come through. You saw that offense when it was really flying on Saturday at Heinz Field. Josh Adams, a backup running back, comes in and goes 20 for 147, averages 7 yards a carry. And he's replacing C.J. Procise, who got hurt early on in that game and left after just 28 yards on 5 carries. DeShone Kizer goes 19 of 26 for 262, throws for 5 touchdowns in that game. And, of course, Will Fuller, just an outstanding performance, 7 receptions, 152 yards, 3 touchdowns. He was unstoppable, as he is in a lot of situations. And we're going to talk about Pitt's pass defense and why it struggled so much and why Will Fuller was able to do what he was able to do and why Pitt insisted on having Avante Maddox cover Will Fuller one-on-one. We're going to talk about all those things. But the reality is that a player like Will Fuller does that on the reg. You know, a guy like Will Fuller has those kind of performances pretty often. Maybe not to that level of 7 for 152 and 3 touchdowns, but he's the guy that you want on your fantasy team because that's the kind of player that he is. He's an outstanding wide receiver, maybe the best wide receiver in the nation, certainly one of the top five, I would say. Tyler Boyd, not too far behind him, but I would say he's somewhere in that mix, Will Fuller is, because he's an outstanding player. On the flip side, though, you know, as I say, when you go against a really talented team, you've got to have your A game. You have to play your best game. And Pitt didn't, not by any stretch. On both sides of the ball, Pitt really made some crucial mistakes. So much so that it's almost interesting to think of, you know what, if you could just play a clean game and avoided some of those mistakes, missed tackles, just blown plays on offense, more missed opportunities on offense. How many times have we talked about that? That was certainly the focus of last week's Panther Lair post game here on Triple I Radio. Again, missed opportunities on offense. If you could cut down on some of those mistakes, I mean, this ends up being a 12-point game. It didn't feel like a 12-point game, but Pitt was able to stay within striking distance throughout the second half, I thought. If you cut down on a few of those mistakes, if on offense you capitalize on a few more opportunities, if on defense you miss just a couple less tackles, Maybe you got a shot to really hang with this Notre Dame team and give them a real ball game and put some real pressure on them at the end. You know, Brian Kelly put in the backup quarterback Brandon Wimbush at the end, and Wimbush was the one who ended up fumbling, forced fumble by Matt Galambos, returned for a touchdown by Juan Price, and Kelly went back to DeShone Kizer. If Pitt could have capitalized on a couple more opportunities offensively and cut down on a few of the missed tackles defensively, just a couple. I'm not talking about a perfect game. I'm not talking about a perfectly clean game, but just correct a few of those mistakes. Then maybe Kelly's not even inclined to put Wimbush into the game because it stays closer than it ended up being. But ifs and buts, right? I mean, that's how games are won and lost. Early on, you know, as Notre Dame was making some mistakes, some crucial mistakes, fumbles, some that Pitt couldn't even recover, and I said, you know, Notre Dame's keeping Pitt in this game. The way, if you're the number 5 team in the country, the way that you lose to a team like Pitt, and not to say Pitt's, you know, chopped liver, but, you know, I mean, you know what I'm saying. If you're the number 5 team in the country, if you're going to lose a game against a team like Pitt, then it's probably going to be because you don't put them away early. And Notre Dame, despite having a 21-3 lead at halftime, I don't think put Pitt away. Not nearly as much as they could have in the first half. And they let Pitt hang around. Pitt just couldn't capitalize on the opportunities. And the thing that, what I really think about as I think about this game, and it's a trend that's been going on for the last third of the season, is slow starts. This team is just struggling out of the gate. And there are big, blatant examples like a 3-play drive for Georgia Tech on the first drive to score a touchdown. Syracuse needing only 2 plays to score a touchdown. North Carolina, I think, needed 7, bunch of slackers that they are. Notre Dame needed 3 plays to score on its first drive. And then it just sort of extends over the course of the first half. I mean, You know, I think Georgia Tech, Carolina, and Notre Dame each scored at least 20 points in the first half. Syracuse scored 17. Pitt was tied at halftime against Georgia Tech, trailing Syracuse at halftime, trailing Carolina and Notre Dame, obviously. But then you get this turnaround, and this is what doesn't make sense. This is where I get confused on things, what I can't figure out about this Pitt team. And maybe we're just, you know, maybe they're just moving through the you know, the struggles of transition and trying to transition a roster and transition a coaching staff, et cetera, et cetera. But it doesn't make sense when you have Georgia Tech, right? 21-21 at halftime. First half, Georgia Tech had 337 yards and 21 points. The second half, 145 yards and 7 points. Syracuse, 17-13 game at halftime. Syracuse, 226 yards and 17 points in the first half. Second half, 100 yards less, 127 yards and just 3 points. Carolina, even a game you lose, right? You're down 20-3 at halftime. First half, Carolina, 250 yards and 20 points. Second half, they had less than 200 yards and only scored 6 points. Now, I heard some people saying, well, Carolina took its foot off the gas. Who cares? Well, I don't know if I agree with that, because against Duke, they went off. They went insane in the first half. Carolina did 486 yards, 38 points at halftime. They still scored 4 more touchdowns in the second half. Against Pitt, they only had 6 points. All right, that game was 38-10 at halftime and never as close as the Pitt game got in the third quarter. Pitt cut Carolina's lead to 10 points in the third quarter, late in the third quarter, and Carolina had to keep playing to preserve the lead. But Pitt's defense kept the heels out of the end zone. All right, the Duke-Carolina game was never as close as 10 points in the third quarter, and Carolina kept lighting up the scoreboard. I don't believe Carolina took its foot off the gas against Duke or against Pitt. And that's why Pitt was able to hold North Carolina only 6 points. Because Pitt made that a game in the second half, largely due to the defense keeping North Carolina out of the end zone. Now, were they as aggressive as they were in the first half? Maybe not. Maybe they let up a little bit. But I don't buy that was the reason they didn't score any touchdowns in the second half. I think Pitt's defense made adjustments, executed better, whatever you want to call it. And it's probably a combination of both of those things. They played better. Notre Dame doesn't fit the model here. Pitt started slow. They gave up 237 yards, 21 points in the first half to Notre Dame. Second half, Notre Dame still got another 200 yards, another 3 touchdowns. So they didn't really improve other than getting the turnover that they returned for the Juan Price touchdown in the second half of that game. But the trend in those first three games, though, Georgia Tech, Syracuse, Carolina, is pretty clear. Pitt gave up 58 total points in the first half of those three games. Georgia Tech, Syracuse, Carolina. 58 points in the first half. You know how many they gave up in the second half? 12. 58 points in the first half, 12 points in the second half over three games. That's a huge difference. Though in the Virginia Tech and Virginia games, 6 points in the second half at Virginia Tech, 9 points for Virginia in the second half. Five game stretch. Virginia Tech, Virginia, Georgia Tech, Syracuse, North Carolina gave up a total of 27 points in the second half. That's outstanding defense. It really is. You got to figure out why you can't stop these teams in the first half. But that's really good in the second half. You talk about being fourth quarter teams or second half teams or teams that show up and finish games. You give up 27 points over a five-game stretch against conference opponents. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, FCS teams and NMAC teams or anything like this. This is 5 conference opponents, Virginia Tech, Virginia, Georgia Tech, Syracuse, and North Carolina. You give up 27 points in the second half. Your defense isn't broken. I'm not convinced that it's broken. I think there are definitely talent issues. There are holes in this roster. I don't think there's any question about that. But your defense isn't broken if you can do that. Give up 27 points in the second half over a 5-game stretch. That's really good. I don't know what the hell you're doing in the first half. I don't know what you're doing giving up the 3-play drive to Georgia Tech and the 2-play drive to Syracuse and the 3-play drive to Notre Dame, where it looks like you have no intent. It looks like you're playing with 9 out there. Pat Narduzzi joked about wishing he could play with 12. It looks like you're playing with 9. It's just such a, I don't know if it's poor scheme or it's poor execution, and it's probably, oftentimes it's a combination of both. But whatever it is, it's not working in the first half. Something, you come out in the second half, though, and Notre Dame broke that streak. Pitt had the streak where they gave up a second-half touchdown to Youngstown State and then went the next 7 games without giving up a touchdown in the second half until Notre Dame scored on Saturday. So that's really good. That's really good defense, even though, you know, this is the Panther Lair post game on Triple Live Radio, and we're talking post game. We're talking about the Pitt Notre Dame game, and the Notre Dame game doesn't fit this narrative and doesn't fit this trend because Notre Dame still lit it up in the second half and scored three touchdowns. They scored 21 points. The previous five games, Pitt had given up 27 points in the second half. So it's an interesting comparison there. But the defense has done its job in the second half and kept, I can't say kept the games close, but it's kept Pitt in the games. And certainly the games that they won there, Virginia Tech, Virginia, Georgia Tech, Syracuse, that was huge for giving Pitt the opportunity to win the game. And then North Carolina, it gave Pitt at least a chance to close in, to get within 10 points in the third quarter. The problem is the defense isn't the only one who is starting slow in these games. The problem, at least in the last 2 weeks, is that the offense is starting slow too. And as much as I want to talk about how they only gave up this many points to that team or only this many points to this team in the second half, blah, blah, blah. In the last two games, Pitt has scored 6 points in the first half. Carolina, Notre Dame. You can't go into games against teams like Carolina and Notre Dame and only score 6 points in the first half. You can't. That's how you end up down 20-3 and 21-3 in halftime. And then you've dug yourself a hole that you're probably not going to be able to climb out of. And in both games, they weren't able to climb out of those holes. 6 points in the first half. These are games where you're going against very good offenses. The two best offenses Pitt will face all season are North Carolina and Notre Dame. And in those games, you know going in, no matter how much your head coach prides himself on defense, that you're going to give up some points and you're going to give up some yards. And maybe 5 years from now, when Pat Narduzzi has built his defense, they're going to be able to go out there and shut down teams like this, teams like Carolina and teams like Notre Dame, good offenses like Carolina and Notre Dame have, maybe in 4 or 5 years, maybe sooner. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But when you're playing a potent team, a potent offense like that, you've got to be ready to go blow for blow. You've got to be ready to go out and score points. And Pitt hasn't done it. And it's not like they haven't had opportunities. I talked so much last week, and I wrote about it last week, and I talked about it on both shows. I talked about it on the Panther Lair post game on Monday as we recapped the North Carolina game, and I talked about it on the Panther Lair show on Thursday. I talked about missed opportunities, too many field goals. I put that on that front page of my website either Sunday night or Friday night or whatever, the day after the game. The day after the North Carolina game, the headline, too many field goals. And that was the theme out of that game. Missed opportunities, too many field goals, not enough sacks. Well, guess what was the problem against Notre Dame? Among other things, there are a lot of things that were problems. But again, you saw this team run into situations where they had opportunities and they failed to capitalize. The first drive of the game, they're driving. They move the ball into Notre Dame territory and they do the throwback pass. And it ends up in like a 13-yard sack. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say, boy, that was a terrible call. It was obviously a terrible result. And truthfully, Notre Dame defended it well. I don't know. I guess probably Adam Bisnawati whiffed on the block. I don't know who was supposed to have the block on the left side of the offense that ended up in the sack. I think even, you know, like Quadri Henderson was the target on that play, and I think he was even covered. I don't think Notre Dame really bit on the toss or the toss to Quadri Olsen to the right. I don't think they bit on it all that well to make that play the home run that I think Jim Chaney was hoping for. I don't hate trying those things. They've shown that they're willing to try to be creative with the offense, and I'm not just talking about Jordan Whitehead. We'll certainly get to Whitehead in a little bit. They've shown that they're willing to be creative with the offense, with Tyler Boyd passes and lining Boyd up in the wildcat or even just in the backfield. They had formation on Saturday, and I think they might have done it against North Carolina too, but they definitely did it on Saturday where they had Boyd lined up at tailback and Chris James lined up at fullback. They had an I formation with a receiver and a tailback, and the tailback was lined up at fullback. And so they're willing to get creative with these things and do different things to try and open the offense up a little bit, and I admire that. I don't have an issue with that. You want to call that play in that situation? Okay. Me personally, I prefer to just keep grinding it out because you're moving the ball. You moved into Notre Dame territory. You're not rolling, but you're going. You're at least making forward progress. And you take a shot on a play like that. I'd almost rather, if you want to try and take a shot on a big play, I'd almost rather have Nate Peterman drop back and really kind of throw a real pass, you know, rather than the throwback pass. But either way, they're in Notre Dame territory. They knock themselves out of it, and that's it. The next drive, they drive all the way down to the 4. They get to the Notre Dame 4, and they have to settle for a field goal. You can't do that. You can't do that against this team. You can't do that against a good offense. And if your defense isn't going to get its act together, you can't do that against any offense. You can't do that against Duke this week. You can't do that against Louisville, and you can't do that against Miami. You get to the four, that thing's got to go in the end zone. You got to score a touchdown. I'm not going to say justification because that's stupid. Obviously, there's no justification for kicking a field goal when you're at the four-yard line. You got to score touchdowns, and the onus is it's just so important for you to get those touchdowns when you're playing against a team like Notre Dame, and they failed to do it. And you can go the rest of the way. I mean, they get to the 21, and they throw a pass to Jordan Whitehead, and he gets picked off in the end zone. This is another missed opportunity. You can't have those. And the offense set themselves back. And that was the theme throughout the first half. They had some, I mean, the second half, Pitt's offense wasn't bad. They scored on 4 out of 5 drives. You know, they scored 4 touchdowns and punted once. So, I mean, they moved the ball. And, I mean, you know, that's not bad. But they started so slow and missed so many opportunities and failed to take advantage of the opportunities that they had. That dug them the hole. You know, the defense is giving up 21 points. Pitt only scores 3 despite having the ball basically in the red zone twice and moving into Notre Dame territory 4 times. And they only come up with a total of 3 points. This is a group effort here to blow this game. You know, and this is what I was saying kind of at the beginning. I mean, if you get, you know, that drive to the 4 turns into a touchdown, right? That's 7 points instead of 3. Let's say that drive, you know, instead of doing the throwback pass, they keep running it, and they just end up having to settle for a field goal. All right, well, that's 10 points now. Instead of 21-3 at halftime, it's 21-10. Okay? Now, and then the interception. All right, let's say instead of throwing the interception, they just keep going. Even if they only kick a field goal, it's 21-13 at halftime. It's a one-score game at halftime. Maybe they get into the end zone, though, and it's 21-17 at halftime. Now, this ifs and buts stuff, I know, is for the birds. But I'm laying it out to illustrate these missed opportunities. It cost them against North Carolina, and it cost them against Notre Dame. And to some extent, you can look at these things and say, you know what? When you look at it that way, it's not like they got run out of their own stadium here. According to the score, they did. 20-3 at halftime, 21-3 at halftime. They got run in the first half. They were killing themselves, though. You settle for field goals. You miss these opportunities. You have, you know, bad plays to take yourself out of scoring position. You're killing your father, Larry. You know, I mean, you're not giving yourself a chance. And that was something Pitt couldn't afford to do. They're not good enough to be able to afford to do that, to take themselves out of position or not capitalize on opportunities. A team like Notre Dame, you know, they scored, what, 3 touchdowns in the first half? They punted 4 times in the first half. They could afford to do that because their offense is potent enough to score 3 touchdowns in the second half, you know, and score on, what, 3 out of 4 possessions or 3 out of 5 possessions, I guess, with the last possession being a 4-play drive basically to kill the clock. You know, Notre Dame's offense is good enough to do that, and their defense is good enough to keep them in the game if their offense starts off slow. Pitt's offense isn't. And Pitt's defense isn't. And so you've got to capitalize on those opportunities. You know, going back to the defense, though, for a second, as it were, because I went back and forth on whether I should spend a lot of time diving into the running game, because, again, I felt like it just – I'll just say this. All right, Pitt, again, let me look at the stat just to make sure I have – the numbers right. I talked so much on Thursday about the running game and how Pitt needed to commit to the running game. I think they have an identity crisis on offense. I don't think they know what they want to do or who they want to be. I think there's a disconnect between what they can do well and what they think they want to do. And if those two things aren't matched up, you're going to run into trouble because you're not going to be trying to do the things that you're good at doing. And right now, there are things that Pitt is good at doing. There are things that this team was built to do. Over the last 4 years, there are things these players were recruited to do, and they're just not doing enough of it. And it concerns me when I hear, you know, Pat Narduzzi says, you know, we're doing a good job grinding out 4 or 5 yards, but we need to get those explosive plays. Well, you do need explosive plays, but man, you know what? It's not a lot of football games have been won just grinding it out 4 or 5 yards at a time. You know, Pitt ran the ball I had two games last season where they ran for 50 times or more because they were just content to just grind it out. And sometimes you got to be content to just grind it out. It came into this game, Pitt, I think, was almost exactly a 1-to-1 pass-run ratio throughout the season. On Saturday, they ran the ball 31 times and threw it 32 times, 1-to-1. This team is not built to be a balanced offense. This offense is not built to be balanced like that. I know every coach says they want to have balance, they want to be multiple, they want to run and pass and be balanced. This offense isn't built to be balanced. They don't have the receivers to be balanced like that. They don't have the offensive line to pass protect to be balanced like that. What they have is a run blocking offensive line that's not perfect, but is better at running than they are at passing. And they have a bunch of running backs and good blocking tight ends who can create a running game. You know, Pitt averaged, just had it here, 5.6 yards per carry against Notre Dame. But they ran the ball the same number of times as they threw it. And it wasn't about the scoreboard. People say, well, look at the scoreboard. Well, they had 18 of each in the first half. When they were down 21-3, they ran it just as much. And even in the third quarter, they ran it more than they threw it. But it all ended up being balanced. And I don't think they – I hate being that guy who just goes right after the offensive coordinator. I hate being that guy who says, well, he doesn't know what he's doing. Why is he calling those plays? I mean, it's the ultimate in kind of football fan – base reaction criticism. The coordinator stinks. Chaney stinks. Conklin stinks. Haley stinks. Nobody ever said LeBeau stinks. Keith Butler stinks, right? That's kind of the easiest knee-jerk reaction to do is the coordinator stinks. But it's never just about that. I mean, there's so many things that go on in a game. I've told this story before, and it's because I think it's the best illustration. I can still remember the 2008 game at Cincinnati. Pitt was very much in the hunt for the Big East title. If Cincinnati won, they clinched the Big East title and a trip to the Orange Bowl. They had the oranges there and everything. And Pitt's first offensive drive of the game, they were just rolling down the field, handing the ball to Sean McCoy, and he was just rolling, just picking up 7-8 yards. He was averaging like 9 yards a carry on this first drive. And they get into like Cincinnati territory, they're at the 30 or 35, somewhere around there, maybe the 40, a little bit closer. It's probably the 35 or the 30. And they line up, and they drop. Bill Saul drops back to pass on first down and takes a sack for like 9 yards. It knocks him out of like field goal range. I think they might have tried a reverse or something on the next play that lost even more yards. It was a bad sequence, and it knocked him out of the field goal range. They ended up losing the game. It wasn't because they didn't score there that they lost the game, but it was a pretty bad sequence. And I remember talking to one of the coaches later because the immediate reaction is Matt Kavanaugh is an idiot. Why would he drop back and pass in that situation when LeSean McCoy is picking up all these yards? Why would he do it? What's he thinking? He's a moron. So I asked one of the coaches, you know, not that day, later, you know, next summer or something like that. I'm like, so what? You know what I don't get is you had this play and you're running the ball so well. Why would you drop back and pass there? You know, you end up taking a sack. And, you know, it just doesn't make sense to me. And the coach said, well, you know, I can see what you're saying, but you don't really know what you're talking about. And he said it nicer than that, but that was essentially the gist of it. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, they call this pass play, and Bill Stahl breaks the huddle and sets the protection to the right side. It's supposed to be set to the left. It's supposed to be the way the play is designed, the way the play was called in, the protection was supposed to be set to the left. Bill Stahl sets it to the right. Cincinnati blitzes off the left side and sacks him because the protection's not there. It was called in to be set to the left. And if the protection had been set to the left, they got exactly what they wanted, which was to catch Cincinnati in a blitz, and they would have had Jonathan Baldwin one-on-one, probably for a touchdown. But because Bill Stahl set the protection to the right, the play goes for a sack, goes for a lost yardage, they end up settling, they don't even get a field goal out of the drive. Now, you and me, John Q. Idiot sitting out here, we all say, and I'm including myself in John Q. Idiot, we can all be John Q. Idiot, or Jane Q. Idiot if you are. We all sit back and say, Matt Kavanaugh, what are you doing? Why are you throwing in that situation? That's stupid. You're running the ball with LeSean McCoy. Why would you throw there? But then you find out that there's always more to it than just the play call. There's usually something small that happens that blows up a play. I mean, earlier this season, I forget what it was, one of the home games. It was Chad Wojtek, ran a jet sweep, and people said, oh, that was stupid because it lost like 1 yard. And it ended up being, and Pat Bostic did his film review with me, and he looked at it and he said, look, there's this one little block that JP Holtz doesn't finish. He doesn't get enough of the defensive end. If he gets enough of the defensive end, which he does 9 times out of 10, Chad Wojcik runs for like 50 yards, probably a touchdown. But because he didn't get enough of the defensive end was able to get inside and make the play. Just that small little thing. But you and I, we sit back and say, why would you call that play? It's stupid. They know he's going to run. They can't, you know, you can't run this play anymore because the defense knows what's coming and they're going to stop it every time. Well, no, if it's just blocked properly, there's one little thing, one tiny little thing. And if it's done right, it goes for a huge play. So this is a long-winded way of saying I don't like to be that guy who says, what's the coordinator doing? What's he thinking? Why is he running? Why is he passing? He needs to pass more. He needs to run more. I hate being that guy. And I've done that over the years. I'm not going to pretend like I've been perfect. Why aren't they throwing more on first down? Why are they running so much on second? And blah, blah, blah. I will say in this situation, I think this team needs to commit to the running game, particularly the power running game, the inside running game. I don't know. I said last week that it almost feels like sometimes they get bored with it. And when Pat Narduzzi's talking about, well, we're doing a good job grinding it out 4 or 5 yards at a time, and we need to make some of those explosive plays. Well, you do, and I know you want to get those explosive plays, and I know that's exciting, but there's something to be said for grinding it out 4 or 5 yards at a time. There's something to be said for moving the ball downfield that way. Because as I said, a lot of good football teams have won a lot of football games playing that way. So we'll see. You're 9 games into the season right now. Are they going to change their philosophy? Are they going to all of a sudden start running the power runs that this offensive line has been built to run, and that these running backs were recruited to run, and this team was basically built to do? Are they going to all of a sudden just start doing it 50 times a game? Probably not. I think you're probably going to continue to see more of the same, or more of the different, if that's what you want to refer to Jordan Whitehead as, more of the different as opposed to more of the same. Never really thought about that. I wonder if there's one opposite of more of the same will be less of the same, but that doesn't really imply a change. That just implies that you're doing the same thing, but you're just doing less of it. I guess more of the different. I like that phrase, more of the different. Let's try and work that in. That's your homework assignment until this week's Panther Lair show on Thursday. Your homework assignment is to work the phrase more of the different into your daily lexicon. More of the different. I like that. Anywho, going back over to the defense now, we're going to flip back, talked about the offense there. But the defense, and this was maybe the biggest problem over the last few games, has been the rush defense. And they were so good. Generally speaking, they were so good at it at the start of the season. They were so good at defending the run. They would give up a big play here or there, but for the most part, they made it very tough sledding for opponents to run the ball. That hasn't been the case for the last 4 games. The rush defense in the last 4 games, quite frankly, has been awful. Now, they definitely had a big problem against Carolina and Notre Dame with the passing attack, and even Syracuse threw the ball well against Pitt. We'll get to that in a second because it's all connected. All the pieces matter. The rush defense, though, in the last 4 games has been awful. It really has. You look at Georgia Tech, Syracuse, North Carolina, Notre Dame. Those 4 games, those 4 teams combined for 861 rushing yards, 215.3 yards per game, 6.15 yards per carry. You're giving up 6 yards per carry over the last 4 games. That's bad rush defense. Now, you want to tell me, okay, Georgia Tech skews it because they had 40 carries for 376 yards. That's fine. Let's take them out. Syracuse, North Carolina, Notre Dame, 485 yards in those 3 games, 161.7 per game, and 4.85 yards per carry. Almost 5 yards per carry for Syracuse, North Carolina, and Notre Dame. 160 yards per game, almost 5 yards per carry for those 3 teams. You compare that to the first 5 games now. Youngstown State, Akron, Iowa, Virginia Tech, Virginia. A total in those 5 games of 424 yards. Just think about that number right there. Just total number. Let's not even get into the averages. 424 yards in those first 5 games of the season. The last 3, 485. 60 more yards in the last 3 games than they gave up in the first 5 combined. But those first 5 games, though, they did average, they allowed an average of 84.8 rushing yards per game, 2.88 yards per carry. That's 2 extra yards per carry over the last 3 games than they gave up in the first 5. 2 extra yards per carry. Twice as many yards per game on the ground. Now, you can talk about talent, and you can talk about, you know, opponent talent, I mean, and you can talk about the level of competition, and that, you know what, you know, Akron had 9 yards or whatever, or Virginia Tech had 9 yards, and Virginia or Akron had didn't have many yards either. I mean, they both had, I'll look at it because the numbers were pretty comical. I forgot how bad some of these were. Oh, yeah, Akron had 42 yards on the ground. Virginia Tech had 9 rushing yards. And obviously those things are going to skew it. But I think we can all agree that in the first 5 games, Pitt's rush defense was really good. They played really well, really consistently. They gave up a big play here or there. There's no question about it. But for the most part, they've made it very difficult to run the ball. The last 3 games, they've been terrible. And this is, you know, as I say, it's all connected. Because the bad run defense leads to issues with the pass defense. Pitt's secondary and linebackers already have some talent issues as it is. There are holes, there are weaknesses, there are vulnerabilities. We all know this. You add in the complicating matter of poor run defense, and you run into some real issues. Why was Avante Maddox one-on-one with Will Fuller all game? Why? Well, according to Pat Narduzzi, it's because they couldn't stop the run. Here's Narduzzi's quote after the game. Quote, when you can't stop the run, he's going to throw a post on you. So if we go back there and help him and play cover 3 and keep everybody back, they're going to run the ball down your throat and everybody will say, hey, did you ever think about putting more guys in the box? We'd like to have 12 out there, but when you're not stopping the run, it's going to take a little away from that. Now, I think there's, end quote, I think there's something philosophical about this. I think Pat Narduzzi's defense is designed a certain way and for the most part is going to leave cornerbacks in one-on-one coverage. And that means a guy like Avante Maddox, who is Pitt's best cornerback, all right, everyone's jumping off a bridge about Avante Maddox and giving him a real hard time after his performance in this game. He's Pitt's best corner, okay? It's period, bar none, okay? He is Pitt's best cornerback. And so, yeah, he drew the assignment of Will Fuller the most because who else are you going to put on him? Well, you got to double him. You got to give him safety help. Okay, that's not a bad idea. Did I mention that Josh Adams was averaging 7 yards per carry? And that's with Pitt not really giving a lot of safety help? Notre Dame took advantage of the way Pitt's defense was playing because they were running the ball well. And by running the ball well, they were able to create those one-on-one matchups and get an outstanding receiver like Will Fuller opportunities to go off for 7 for 150 and 3 touchdowns. They were giving Will Fuller one-on-one opportunities, and he won those one-on-one opportunities. When the ball was thrown to him, when he actually could get to it and catch it, which Notre Dame could have had more yards. This is what I'm talking about, that Notre Dame didn't put Pitt away when it had the opportunity. It was those passes that were overthrown for Will Fuller, or he could have had even more yards or bigger stats and a bigger performance than he had. But how did he end up getting all those one-on-one matchups? How did Notre Dame end up getting him isolated on Avante Maddox and take advantage of that matchup? It's because they were able to run the ball well, and Pitt's defense had to respect the run. Huh. Now, this all sounds familiar. If you listen to the Panther Lair Show last week on Thursday, what did I talk about? What did I say? Anybody remember? Raise your hand. Do you remember what I said? Oh, yeah. I said if Pitt could run the ball more effectively, then opponents would have to respect Pitt's rushing game. Opponents would have to fear Pitt's rushing game. I told you that Pat Bostic told me, and Pat's a lot smarter than I am, that North Carolina basically played a cover 2 defense the entire game against Pitt. No respect for the running game. 7 men in the box. No respect. And because they didn't respect the running game, they were able to double cover Tyler Boyd and make life very difficult for him. So let's put it all together now, children. If you can run the ball, you're going to have a better chance of opening things up for your star wide receiver. Notre Dame is a case in point. Okay, Notre Dame was able to run against Pitt's 9-man front. And not only were they able to run against the 9-man front, they were able to create one-on-one opportunities for Will Fuller. Pitt needs to force opponents to respect their running game. And I'm coming back to it again. Here I am again, talking about the commitment to the running game. And I don't have much to add on top of it. Because I said it all last week. I basically laid it out again by talking about what Notre Dame did to Pitt. And if Pitt can't do it or won't do it or chooses not to do it, I mean, you talk about why Tyler Boyd's yards per capture down, and he had a big 51-yard touchdown. So, you know, that was nice to see him finally open things up. It was good to see Boyd finally get a bit of an explosive play in there. But if Pitt can't force opponents to respect the running game, the passing game is going to suffer, as it has. And, you know, it's not too complicated. So, I mean, I think Pitt could have... Could Pitt probably have found a better way to scheme against Will Fuller? I guess. I'm not smart enough to say definitively. I'm not going to sit here and just yell out, double him! Because, you know, Pat Narduzzi's a pretty smart guy, and he's had a lot of success as a defensive coordinator. I think if it was as simple as, double him, they probably would have done it. Narduzzi wants to say, hey, you know what? We needed our safeties to try and stop the run, which they incidentally did a poor job. They did a poor job of stopping the run. But if Narduzzi wants to say we couldn't double Will Fuller because we needed all the help we could get trying to stop the run, I'm going to buy it. He's had a lot of success. Pat Narduzzi, and I will say this about him. This is one thing I know for sure about Pat Narduzzi. He's had more success coordinating a Power 5 conference defense than I have. So I'm going to defer to him on whether or not Pitt was able to double Will Fuller. They obviously did not double him. I'm going to defer to Pat Narduzzi on whether they could have doubled him. All right, let's jump into our... We have our segments we do each week here on the Panther Post Game, right? Let's jump into our three key stats and our good, the bad, and the ugly because, I feel like we've covered a lot of the big issues. Pitt started slow. I had to touch on it a little bit. I don't think they were committed enough to the run, even though they were averaging 5.5 yards per carry. And the defense started slow, and you know, rush defense continues to be a problem for this defense over the last four games, certainly. So let's move on then, our three key stats from the game, and we're going to start with a defensive stat, and it's 7.3. That's the yards per play Pitt has given up over the last four games. That's a terrible average. You're giving up 7.3 yards per play. It's no wonder teams are scoring on you with fair regularity. 7.3 yards per play. That number actually came down. It was a lot higher after the North Carolina game. It was like 7.66, which I kind of looked it up, or not kind of, I did look it up. And at the time, you know, last week after the North Carolina game or after last weekend's games, UTEP was worse in the nation in yards per play allowed. I think it was like 7.5 or 7.4 or something like that. So Pitt's three-game performance, Georgia Tech, Syracuse, Carolina, yards per play were worse than UTEP's yards per play on the entire season. Now, I know you're comparing a sample size, 8 or 9 games versus 3 games, but for those 3 games, Pitt's yards per play were worse than the worst in the NCAA. Well, it got a little bit better. It dropped from 7.66 to 7.3, so that's an improvement, right? Notre Dame only averaged, 6.4 yards per play. Really brought that number down. If you're giving up 7.3 yards per play over the last four games, I'm not going to say a miracle, but it's a bit of a surprise that you are 2-2. That you won 2 out of those 4 games. When you're giving up 7.3 yards per play, you can't give up yards in that kind of chunks. I mean, this isn't rocket science here, people. If I tell you 7.3 yards per play, you say that's a bad number. So we know that. Next key stat, 3,013. That's Tyler Boyd's career receiving yardage. He is Pitt's all-time leader in receptions and all-time leader in receiving yards. He's going down as one of Pitt's all-time greats. I mean, I think you'd have to put him... I mean, I'm not really going out on a limb here. He's in the top three with Antonio Bryant and Larry Fitzgerald. And we can debate whether he's above Bryant or how close he is to Fitzgerald. I mean, his numbers have now surpassed Bryant's. You know, so we can debate whether or not Tyler Boyd belongs in the conversation as number two. If we're ranking them, and statistically he's number one in both categories, and he's done it in basically a little more than 2.5 seasons. We can debate how close he is to number one. I think we're all probably still going to agree that Larry Fitzgerald is number one. I think Boyd's performance this season has hurt his reputation a little bit for Pitt fans because he's not making the big plays that he made in the past. And we talked about this before, about how he's being used this season. He seems to be more of a possession receiver. He's working out of the slot more. And the result is that he's not getting downfield to make the big circus catches or the big deep catches that he's made in the past. But he's putting in some it's a workmanlike performance this season. He's putting in yeoman's work and earning every bit of what he's going to get at the next level. And he's taking some shots. He's getting hit pretty hard. And bouncing back up and catching a lot of passes, a lot of important passes for this team. My opinion on Boyd versus Bryant, it's tough. There's recency bias because we're watching Boyd right now, and it's been a long time since we watched Antonio Bryant in a Pitt uniform. And so that, I try to factor that in. Maybe I'll go back and watch YouTube videos of Antonio Bryant at Pitt. And after that, I'll come to my opinion after I watch his sizzle reel, his highlight reel. I'll watch his mixtape and see what I think and then compare it to what I think about Boyd right now. But Boyd is definitely in the conversation. He's in the top three, maybe top two. Probably not top one, but he's up there in the top three without a doubt. And then the third key stat I thought to come out of Saturday's game, four sacks. Pitt had four sacks against Notre Dame. That's four times as many sacks as Pitt had in the previous three games combined, because Pitt against Georgia Tech, Syracuse, and North Carolina had exactly one sack. And after getting 21 sacks through the first five games of the season, Pitt had just one over the next three. So adding four on Saturday against Notre Dame was definitely a step in the right direction. 26 sacks on the season. They already broke last year's mark of 19 when they had 19 sacks in 13 games, and they passed that in the first five games of the season. But then they went into a real drought with only one over the course of the next three games. So it was definitely a positive for Pitt's defense. As we talk so much about the negatives for Pitt's defense, it was definitely a positive for Pitt's defense to come up with four sacks against Notre Dame. All right, we'll jump into the good, the bad, and the ugly here on the Panther Lair postgame on Trib Live Radio here Monday morning. We do this every Monday morning, by the way, in case you weren't aware. If this is your first time listening, every Monday morning at 9 a.m. we get together and talk about the most recent Pitt game here on the Panther Lair postgame. And I don't know if I ever said my name. I'm Chris Peek from PantherLair.com, Panther-Lair.com, which if you made it 45 minutes into this podcast thinking, listening to me and you had no idea who I am, well, I guess that means I was pretty interesting, or at least you like the dulcet tones of my smooth voice as I rock this mic right here. Anyway, good, bad, the ugly. Good, Jordan Whitehead. We haven't talked about him yet, but I think it'd be hard-pressed to find anyone who thinks that Jordan Whitehead's debut was on offense was not an impressive one. Never mind the fact that he was the leading tackler on the team, again, for like the fifth or sixth time this season. But Whitehead made his debut on offense. Five snaps, carried the ball four times for 27 yards, scored two touchdowns, and was targeted on a pass that got intercepted. But, a couple things you take away from it. One, Whitehead's a playmaker. We know this. Everybody who saw him in high school knows this. I think I wasn't really impressed with the plays they used him on initially. The first few plays is just running these toss plays to him, okay. The first touchdown he scored I thought was really well blocked, and he just had the speed to get through it. The second touchdown was where I really opened my eyes a little bit and said, whoa, okay, now I might see. Because the second touchdown, he takes I forget it was a handoff or a toss or whatever it was to the right, and he's running for the end zone. He's running for the corner of the end zone, and there are defenders there. And I'm not sure if any of the other running backs on the team would have gotten to the end zone. But Whitehead's speed got him there ahead of – because he had to dive in. He had to dive in and reach his arm over the pylon, that kind of thing. His speed is what got him into the end zone. And you can kind of see, all right, I see what the appeal is here. And, this might come back to the discussion we were having about the running game and Pat Narduzzi wanting to get some big explosive plays out of the running game, not being happy with just grinding it out down the field. And I understand that. I think there's Whitehead brings an element of speed and explosiveness that is probably lacking a bit on this offense. I'm still of the opinion that to a large extent, you need to figure out your issues before you try and, throw just throw whatever you can at the wall. You know, I'm of the opinion that I think you need to get yourself right and get really good at what you can get good at before you start throwing things like this in. But at the same time, you're 9 games into the season. You only have 3 games left. If you haven't figured it out by now, if you haven't gotten locked into what you can do well and started doing it well by now, then you might as well start throwing stuff against the wall. Because I don't know if it's going to get any better. You know, if you haven't figured it out by now, I don't know if you're going to. So, it's going to be interesting to watch how this goes, how this develops going forward with Jordan Whitehead. He is the team's leading tackler. And this was the funniest part of it to me. On Saturday, after his first touchdown or his second touchdown, I see tweets from people, not so much people who watch Pitt all the time, you know, not fans or media people, but just people who watch college football, some Pitt fans, I guess, and general college football observers. They say, well, you know what, this Jordan Whitehead is going to be good. Really. The fact that he was the leading tackler on a team as a true freshman, that didn't clue you in already that he's going to be good? Come on. Whitehead had already established that he is one of the best freshmen in the ACC this season. He had already established that by being Pitt's leading tackler as a freshman. Him scoring touchdowns is a bonus for the offense. It can give them a weapon that they can use, but that's not the that's not the confirmation that Jordan Whitehead is going to have a good career. All right, we already knew Jordan Whitehead already has had a good career. He's off to a great start to his career, and it has nothing to do with him scoring touchdowns. This is just an added facet to his game, something else he can do for you. But this wasn't the moment he arrived. He arrived, 9 games ago. That was the good from that game. The bad, the pass defense is what I'm going to go with, because it just was, particularly on Will Fuller, they just didn't defend it well enough. They didn't, despite sacking Deshaun Kizer 3 times and sacking Brandon Wimbush once, they didn't get enough pressure to force bad passes. And, Kizer had time to find Fuller. And he connected with him on a lot of passes. He didn't even connect with him the numbers could have been a lot more ugly. They could have been a lot uglier than they were, than 262 yards on 19 of 26 passing and 5 touchdowns. I mean, Kizer probably could have had 7 or 8 touchdowns in this game, to be quite honest. He missed that many open receivers and just had that many kind of poorly thrown balls. So, the pass defense for me was the bad, and then the ugly was the drops. I don't have the numbers on it. I haven't gone back and watched the game yet to count the number of drops, but Tyler Boyd, J.P. Holtz, Scott Orndorff, I think did George Aston drop a pass? I mean, it was just probably Dontez Ford. It was bad. It was ugly, because this is what I was talking about earlier about capitalizing on opportunities. When you're playing against a team like Notre Dame, you've got to capitalize. You can't have those kind of mistakes. If the ball's in your hands, you have to catch it. Right? You can get away with that against Youngstown State or Akron or somebody. You can't get away with that against Notre Dame or North Carolina. You're not going to get away with it against Duke. All right? And then in Louisville and Miami, you're not going to be pushovers either. You're not going to be able to get away with these things in conference play. You've got to make those catches. That was ugly. And I guess the upside for Pitt is that it's not a trend. It's not something, you've seen that all year. This team just has a problem with drops. That was just a particularly bad game. And it was really bad. And it cost them. Among a lot of things cost them. But that was certainly one that contributed to the loss. And there are always a lot of factors that go into it. And that was certainly one of them. All right, I think we're all out of time here on the Panther Lair postgame on Triple Live Radio. Remember, Chris Peak, the website, pantherlair.com, panther-lair.com, or pittsburgh.rivals.com, however you want to access it. You can follow me on Twitter at pantherlair, P-A-N-T-H-E-R-L-A-I-R. We'll, of course, be back on Thursday afternoon, 2 p.m., for the Panther Lair show. We do it every week, and we do this show, the Panther Lair postgame, on Monday mornings at 9 a.m. So lots of Pitt coverage always on the website, always on Twitter, always on Facebook, always here with our shows on Trip Live Radio. So thanks for tuning in. We appreciate it. Thursday, we'll be back to preview Duke, talk about the Blue Devils, what they have going on. We'll also talk about some recruiting stuff. Pitt got a transfer tight end. Didn't get a chance to get into that today, but we'll talk about it on Thursday. Chris Clark decides to go to Pitt. Be sure to check the website. We'll have plenty of coverage of Clark's decision and a lot of other recruiting stuff, because they had a bunch of recruits at the Notre Dame game. All right, we're done here. We will talk to you on Thursday afternoon. See you on the website or Twitter or wherever we run into you. I'm Chris Peek. This is the Panther Lair Postgame here on Triple Live Radio.